The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Well, the president kicked off his campaign for 2020 last night. We'll have some audio coming up from that here in just a little bit. We've been doing some, not really analysis of what the rest of the media is doing, the different takeaways, because we said, no, there are no takeaways really from this, especially from this president, because you don't know what he says one day may not necessarily be the direction of the campaign. Let me put it this way. What he said last night may not be the direction of the campaign, but if it is, it's not that bad.
Right.
Media criticized him for he just talked about and was awfully dark about all the problems and how he's been under assault. And that's fine. He's talking to his base. Mm-hmm. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw no problem with the president did yesterday. You and I talked about the fact that he did say the other side's for open borders, which is good, but you have to go and you have to attack them. Here's one of the things that I saw here from newsbusters.org. Media Research Center that's part of Newsbusters had this new study. TV news hides the radicalism of the 2020 Democratic candidates. There are already two notable facts about the 2020 Democratic primary race. These candidates have championed some of the most radical policy proposals ever seen in American politics, and they have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The broadcast networks have essentially suppressed this news. MRC analysts reviewed all the coverage of the 2020 Democrats on ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News programs from January 1st through June 15th. Early as it is, the Democrats have already been featured or mentioned in a total of 220 evening news stories or nearly 4 hours of airtime. It is at this stage of the nomination contest, as each candidate begins their campaign, that we see the most journalistically assigned labels as reporters try to help viewers pigeonhole each newly announced wannabe's place on the ideological spectrum. Yet the vast majority of this year's coverage, 202 stories or 92% of the stories, failed to include any ideological label in front of the Democrat candidates. And the labels that the reporters have used tended to the mild side, 10 uses of progressive, 3 of liberal, 3 centrist, 2 moderate, and 1 populist used by CBS to describe Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' platform back on March 2nd.
Huh.
Despite his long record of extreme positions, no reporter apparently felt comfortable calling Bernie Sanders a socialist. Although there were 4 occasions when the networks confided he was a self-described democratic socialist, a word choice that ensured voters knew that the Vermont senator embraced the term. Talking with Sanders last week about his plan for a complete government takeover of health insurance, NBC's Harry Smith refused to characterize the plan himself, but told Sanders the word that will come from Republicans is socialism. As Sanders scoffed, this is not a socialist program. You know what a socialist program is? It's the Veterans Administration. You know what is a socialist program? Your police department, your fire department, those are government-run programs. By the way, of course, his his, you know, again, he's trying to call himself a Democrat socialist, but deny that he's involved in socialism with Medicare for All.
Right.
Of course it is. What you're doing is you're taking over an industry.
Yes.
Actually, you can make the case that it's socialism moving into communism.
Because you're eliminating, you would have to, under your plan, outlaw the private sector coverage.
You would outlaw the private sector. The government takes over an industry. That industry no longer exists in the United States, and it's a viable industry.
Mm-hmm. That's communism.
And at that, so when he states it, and of course socialism is more government control of the capital, and of course the government taking over the private insurance industry is, of course, government taking, you know, using more of the private sector capital to run a program. It's government, more government control of capital. That's socialism. And as you move into elimination of property rights and the takeover or the nationalization of businesses is then when you start moving towards communism.
Maybe he just didn't finish the sentence. It's not socialism. Well, you're right. It's not, because that's communism.
Neither Sanders nor any of the other Democrats were ever tagged with labels suggesting they were outside the mainstream. Words like extreme, radical, fringe, far left, ultra liberal, or ultra left were not used, even though variations of these terms, far right, ultra conservative, and kamikaze conservative, have been used to describe GOP presidential candidates with far more mainstream positions. What did we see last week? What was an extreme position by Trump, and we went, or by Republicans, we went, that's not extreme. I forgot what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I thought I said it to you. I said it to somebody. I went, well, this isn't extreme. Mm-hmm. And they were calling it extreme. And they point out, yet this is a group which includes candidates who have proposed radical policies such as, just a sample, free health care, free child care, free college, massive forgiveness of student loans, reparations for descendants of slaves, the growth-smothering regulations of the Green New Deal, doubling the federal minimum wage, tearing down existing barriers on the U.S.-Mexican border, refusing to appoint any pro-life judges, increasing the Supreme Court to 15 members, and eliminating the Electoral College. All of those that you can view from a variety of different lenses as being radical positions.
Right.
The progressive and liberal labels were affixed to only five candidates: Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, but NBC added liberal firebrand.
Liberal firebrand.
Right. Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris,
okay.
Cory Booker, and
liberal
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Firebrand.
Moderate and centrist were employed for Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, Tim Ryan, while the rest of the field was sparred any ideological labeling. And that's because Julian Castro is a libertarian conservative.
Yes, clearly. Have they ever called the president a Republican firebrand?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
Despite the moderate tag, Biden's lifetime rating from the American Conservative Union is scarcely higher than socialist Sanders, 12.7% for the former vice president, 6.8% for the Vermont senator. Mm. Even as the networks downplayed the 2020 Democrat far leftism, they eagerly touted adjectives describing the candidate's race, gender, ethnicity, sexual identity, and applauding the group as crowded and diverse, historically diverse, and the most diverse group ever to run. So there you go. By the way, I would hate their job. Newsbusters.org or the Media Research Center,
right.
Because they actually have to go back and watch all of these newscasts and then and then say, okay, that word was used there, that word was used there. Mm-hmm. In order to, so people
so
know,
they can measure it.
Somebody has to do that kind of work. We salute them for doing it. Rich Noyes, I think, is the gentleman who did a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we salute you for doing it because I wouldn't want that job. Your job.
He needs a drink.
You need to watch all the Gary. You need to watch all the network newscasts and analyze it to the minutia, and then slow it down, and then start, you know, and start writing down every time this word's used or this word's. You need to do an entire. Your only job is to analyze the nightly news.
How about no?
There's no way. I quit.
I couldn't do it. I quit.
I'm done. I quit. Or stock the bar heavily.
Well, and again, this is, and we've said this before, that this is why when you have hundreds of millions, billions of dollars over a period of 4 years, whatever, which it gets into that kind of money at that point, that's why you need to effectively use it. And what you need to do in the Trump administration, because they're not going to get help from the media.
No, they are not. No.
So what you have to do is you have to define the other side.
Yep.
If the media won't define what the, and you don't have to exaggerate. You don't need to exaggerate at all in defining these candidates as radical.
No. Nope, not at all.
And so you need to define what you are about, then you need to define the other side. And as we've said, the president last night came out and talked about the other side's for open borders.
Right.
Now you got to say more than that, though. That yeah. seems to be where the president and the campaign has stopped. Now, it hasn't been a campaign really until now, but but it seems the president always, and he doesn't explain it. We've said, no, once you make the accusation, you have to go to the political throat of the issue, which would be, as we have stated before, want to know how you know they're for open borders? Listen to them speak. We need comprehensive immigration reform, which would be what? And ask them the question then. Ask them the question, because I know I'm going to get response that the candidates are going to deny that they're for open borders. Fine. Then what would your policy be if we had total amnesty tomorrow? If we had amnesty completely tomorrow, would you have a plan where you would control the border? And is there a point where you would state that at this point you either have to be here legally or not legally? Hypothetically, if we had amnesty tomorrow, what would the opinion be of the Democrats? And let's go through some of the things that they have said. And then you go through all the things they've said. If that's not open borders, then they need to clarify themselves. But I believe they're for open borders because everything that we have brought to them, you know, whether it's a partial amnesty, whether it's about allowing it, we can't get past the fact that once we get to the point of saying if we solve this problem of those here illegally now, will you help us solve the problem permanently to have a secure border? You know, and we know, we can't get their cooperation.
Right. Well, and there's no half measure when it comes to enforcement. So the question is, what is your plan for enforcement?
Enforcement.
If you, and you would start it there. I mean, Julian Castro, let's just do away with the crime.
Right.
Let's just change the law. Well, if there's no crime, there can't be enforcement. So it's over. You would just change the law to say, essentially, no border. I mean, open border means no border, none.
You have to own the narrative that you know that the majority of the American people agree with you on, and you must make them respond. And then when they respond, that's when you control.
Right.
You can say, and you notice they didn't answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are for open borders. You make the accusation and you make them defend that they are not what they claim that they are.
Exactly.
Look, Jake Tapper did it to Beto O'Rourke the other day. Look, Julian Castro says that if you're here illegally, it shouldn't be a crime. What do you think? And he went on with this long explanation and Jake Tapper stopped him and he said, well, that's the question is, do you agree with Julian Castro? Goes on again, doesn't answer the question. Well, my question to you is, do you agree with Julian Castro? Should it be a crime to be over here, or would you agree with him that we should eliminate it being a criminal act to be here in the United States illegally? And he said, no, I wouldn't go that far.
Right.
He was forced to make that statement, even though I don't believe him.
Mm.
O'Rourke is for open borders. Obviously is. Look at all the other statements. And that's when I would have, and Jake Tapper didn't do it, that's what I would have challenged all of his other statements that he has made. where he has hinted at open borders but not come out directly and said it. But it shows that even in the O'Rourke campaign, even though they're for open borders, they're very sensitive to saying it publicly. You've got to make them, you've got to back them into a corner. It just can't be the quick rhetoric or accusation. You've got to bury them politically. You've got to bury them rhetorically.
Yep. Yep.
And that's what this campaign, I believe, must do if they want to ensure a win. I still think they could win without doing any of this because you just don't know who's going to end up as a Democrat. And remember, the circular firing squad begins next week. And so we
two small circles.
The two small circles. I'm sorry, two small circular firing squads begins next week. And so once they start getting vetted, we'll see what happens. But the fact is, as you and I have said, you always run a campaign as if you're the underdog.
Sure.
And people time. And don't have this debate. Don't sit there and get caught up in, well, the polls aren't accurate. No, if you're running it right, you believe the polls are accurate, and you believe you're behind. If the polls show you're in front, you still believe that you're behind. That's how you run it.
Yep.
Don't get into the argument of whether the polls are accurate or not. They are accurate. Why? Because the campaign's doing these internal polling.
Yes. And the headwinds are against you. You know that. Better than anyone. And by the way, your base knows that. They need to help you rally as well.
Yes.
You get them energized, keep them energized, and you can win.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We just touched on it earlier. We'll touch on it again coming up following the bottom of the hour, and this is the extra-long negotiating session between the president and the president of China next week
at the
G20. And you had said earlier that you weren't that optimistic. Neither am I, because I still don't know where the breakthrough is going to be.
Well, I just don't know if it is true that China is worried about changing their laws, because we had heard that right about the time they did the last walk away from negotiations. Their representatives were in D.C., and it fell down, it broke down. And when all that was happening, we had all of the advisors for the president were talking about it in unison. They were out saying the same thing, that China had to change their laws as a result of it, of this trade agreement. And we, of course, put two and two together. That has to be a part of the enforcement mechanism, right? Mm-hmm. And if they're changing their laws and they're opening up to more capitalism in their society, then they're opening quite possibly the Pandora's box, and they know the ramifications long term of that. That means less power for their central government.
We had said this, and this really gets lost. Only a few, I think, economic publications. I think the Wall Street Journal also pointed out, as we did early on, we said, look, what's completely lost on this is if Trump gets the deal that he wants and gets China to actually change their laws and not be subsidizing and opening up their markets to American goods, he will have given the Chinese people a better gift than the Chinese government has ever given the Chinese people.
Yes, and I think the Chinese government right now knows that. The potential. Yeah,
exactly, right, the potential of it.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I don't expect much to happen at G20.
erratic stormy weather, Red Eye Radio will be going into a rain delay. No. For the next 90 minutes, you'll hear snippets from our last Christmas show. Do not adjust your set.
That's false. That's fake news. We are actually here.
Well, we don't have the rights to show I Love Lucy episodes during a rain delay, so we play old Christmas shows.
We are getting some weather, though. I mean,
man, it was heavy rain coming through. It was just lightning, and I didn't notice any when I looked outside. It was just rain and lightning, and not quite what we had this past Sunday and the Sunday before, which was pretty destructive. You combine those two Sundays, and we had a lot of wind damage in our area.
You know, you and I just getting the discussion about the president going to meet with the president of China next week at the G20 summit. They're going to have an extra long meeting now, not just a meeting, but an extra long meeting.
Yes, right. That's right.
And you and I have stated, we said, you know, where do they go? Because here is, you know, Wall Street Journal pointing out that here's the blowback from industry to proposed tariffs isn't something that Trump can ignore, said Michael Hirson, who heads China coverage for the Eurasia Group, a risk advisory firm. As his political advisors are no doubt telling him, this next round of tariffs has a much more direct impact on U.S. households than previous rounds. It will be visible to the Walmart shopper. So if the economists know it, if his aides know it, China knows it. You and I talked about the president last night saying that this may be the best economy in the history of the United States. It is not. It is not. We already went through earlier about how when you saw economic growth during the Reagan administration, even in 84, 7.2%. It was double what it is right now. Last year was 2.9%.
Right, right.
All right. Even though I think the average probably for the Obama administration was roughly what, about 2.1, 2.2 for the entire year, for the entire 8 years, Obama reached 2.9% in 2015. Last year for Trump was 2.9%, nowhere close to 7%. Remember, on the campaign trail, the president said we can get to 4, 5, 6% growth. You and I said you'll never get there with tariffs. And so again, there's a price to be paid for all of it. You and I looking, and you showed me this article that I just completely read here. You had seen it earlier and brought it to my attention from the Business Insider, that truckers are warning of a bloodbath as trucking companies go bankrupt and slash their profit expectations. And when you look at it, the year to year from May to May.
Yeah, there are a number of things to look at. First of all, the spot loads that are down, this has dropped 62%. That's a huge, huge drop, obviously. You look at a number of things there in the capacity and how it is down. You're basically looking at right now, because of the factories that have slowed greatly, a terrific slowdown in trucking. I mean, this would be considered for an industry about massive, as close to a recession as you can get if this trend continues. There were some positive signs in April. May was not good.
Right. We had mentioned that. Even though transportation overall was down, trucking was actually up in April, but
right,
not the case for May.
Yep. And so the rates for the van loads, those are down 20% in May year over year. So when the rates are dropping, and then you have, again, spot loads dropping by 62.6% in May year over year, that's a problem. Again, the question is, do you have a rebound in June? There's the question. And you have a number of smaller trucking companies going out of business. There was New England Motor Freight. It was number 19 in its segment. Falcon Transport also shut down this year. They laid off 550 employees, and that happened very quickly in April. But New England Motor Freight filed for bankruptcy. And again, being number 19 in your sector, if you're in the top 20, that means you're fairly healthy, but at some point. And obviously, when you go through that situation, there are a number of other factors. You would have to look at everyone's books, every operation's books, in terms of other factors in a bankruptcy or shutdown. It has happened before, and it happens even during good times. But the point is, it's a trend. And when it's a trend, it's alarming. And when spot freight is down 62% May over May, you're going to ring the bell.
Whenever we analyze the economy, we look at the numbers. The political rhetoric doesn't mean anything to us, whether it comes from a Republican or a Democrat. It's what are the numbers that exist out there. And then if we know it, does the White House know it when it comes to how they are going to negotiate with China? And also, does China know it? And again, I'm sure that the United States understands because, as you know, the CIA does the economic analysis of every country all the time. We know the situation in China, and China probably because we live in a free economy where all the numbers are public to everyone worldwide. It's hard to hide the actual numbers from anybody in the world. In fact, you can't hide the actual numbers. So where does the president go? Look, the president came out, and now you don't hear anything about it. But the president came out, what was it, 10 days ago or mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, mm. when he talked about the fact that, we're going to put tariffs on all Mexican products if illegal immigration didn't stop. Well, now nobody's even talking about that anymore. That went away. That was something that Robert Lighthizer, his chief trade negotiator, who's as populist as you can get, told him no. I mean, you had rare, as close as you can get to a unanimous verdict from his advisors, both his advisors that agreed with him and probably his advisors, Larry Kudlow, that doesn't agree with them on some of the tariff things, that they had a rare moment of unity saying, no, you can't do this. And now nobody's talking about this. They said, if you do this, this is going to be felt. The president came out, and this is the danger. When you come out and say this is the best, this may be the best economy ever, and it doesn't deliver over the next year, and you're running for president of the United States. Right. And so when you look at China right now, China knows the situation that the president is in. I don't think China's done bluffing yet.
No.
I don't think because we've
said it all along. They have more time. They don't have the same political pressure. It's there. They're under pressure, but they can hide it. Remember, they don't want something else that came out of the whole walkaway thing is China wanted to control the propaganda on this on both sides. They did not want the deals of this known to the public in the U.S. or anywhere else. They wanted just the surface details. Just a simple outline.
That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen in the U.S. because you're dealing with, you know, so many moving parts here. And we have laws that dictate that, no, that has to be made to the public. Look, you look at a bunch of different things that are going on right here. And we just touched on freight issues. And they said part of this in May was bad weather. Okay. Fine. Assume that's accurate and true. The rest of it is tariffs. This is what we've been saying to the administration. The president can't control the weather, but he can control the tariff situation because they're looking at the factory output. You look at the West Coast volumes.
Right.
The West Coast volumes, the shipping. That's all the stuff. I mean, goods going out, goods shipped is down somewhere in the area of 20%.
Yep.
That's not due to bad weather. It being a West Coast volume issue is not due to bad weather. Because we hear that going back to the Obama. Well, it was a tough winter, and we had a bad. All right,
and we called them on that.
We did.
The Obama administration.
So,
admitted that, yeah.
So then let's see some trends in up through the mid June up to this point in June. Show us some indicators that show the rebound from that part of it, right? Because if that's true, that means that June would be making up for that bad weather trend that created problems and you're fixing those problems and making up for that volume on the other side during good weather times. Well, but that's not what's going on
here. Well, the trend for the really the first 5 months of the year overall on the shipment of goods, when you take rail,
intermodal,
rail, truck, intermodal, airplane shipping. Right. Is down
right
every yes. month month this year
right and you look at even UPS. I mean, they're looking at their situation. Yes. They're talking about their first quarter, and it was not good. And so it comes down to the movement of goods. It comes down to what the consumer's doing. It comes down to the global trade, and they touch on that in this Business Insider article. But why is there a downturn in global trade?
Look, we agree on China. We might not agree to how the president handled Europe or handled Canada or handled Mexico. We agree with him on China, but it's a combination of all of them. And we believe that the administration should have first attempted to isolate China and not got into any type of trade war with our trade allies that we really didn't have any kind of beef with.
Right.
I got an email the other day saying, but Mexico's ripping us off. Well, then the president just got you a deal where Mexico's still ripping you off because the deal's basically the same. So, I mean, there are no major changes. There are no super incredible major changes. The new NAFTA will be 98% the old NAFTA.
Right.
And the only thing they might have done is the president made it, by agreeing to the deal, more expensive to produce cars in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Which means they'll move somewhere else to produce them and sell them back here if they can make up for the shipping costs.
Yep.
So, again, as we said before, nobody can change economics, which is how people respond to incentive and or disincentive.
Yep.
But the case is, I want this president to be reelected because there is no other choice. Flaws, the greatness of this presidency and the not-so-greatness of this presidency, there is no other choice. And the president yesterday, if he starts out on the campaign and he's going to now be promoting that this is the greatest, possibly the greatest economy of all time, it isn't, but if he's going to promote that and the economy goes in the opposite direction, he's going to have a tough time winning election in 2020.
Yep.
Because the one thing he has is the economy. And if people believe you're saying one thing on the economy and they're feeling something different, that's where you lose elections.
Yes.
Because it is the economy stupid.
Yes.
Remember that.
Mm-hmm. It really, and that will drive everything else. If the economy is chugging along, that's, you won't have to point to the numbers, promote it, boast about it, but you really won't have to, because it will be there. People will know that. They know a good economy, and that fear won't be there at all. Right now, the fear is there.
Well, you saw the stock market yesterday. You saw how any sense of optimism right now, you see them react, because I do believe that there is pessimism that exists.
Yes.
Yep. Right now, I mean, based on the numbers that are coming out recently, so. I don't know how you solve it on China. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if China said, go ahead, put the tariffs of $300 billion on our products.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because what they're daring them to do is risk losing the election.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there promoting it's the greatest economy of all time. All right, tariff your economy into a success.
Yes. If it's great,
right,
don't end it.
And that's the challenge the president faces right now with China for good reasons. I agree with the president on it. But the reality is you're always fighting between, remember, because when you get into a trade war, both sides are hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And the American public may stand by you until they get hurt. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Did you see Brett Favre, former quarterback of Green Bay Packers, that on his Instagram account, it was like, I'm coming back. I'm coming back to the NFL. And people are like, what?
Yeah.
He's 49.
Yeah, right.
And then it was deleted, and he said, I'm not coming back. Somebody hacked into my account. And remember the XFL?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the ball player? He hate me?
Mm-hmm.
He was missing. Rob Smart. He was missing for 6 days.
Wow!
It came out. They did find him though. He's okay.
Okay, good.
So
good.
People were worried about him, but apparently
Where he was?
No, don't know where he was. But the information came out that he is at this moment okay. Is sort of what they were making it sound like.
Right.
So I don't know if he was having problems or whatever. But
yeah. All right. Good news.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Well, game on.
After 2 years, 1.4 million pages of documents, 500 search warrants, 500 witnesses, 2,800 subpoenas, and 40 FBI agents working round the clock. What did they come up with? No collusion. And the facts that led our great attorney general to determine no obstruction. Our country is now thriving, prospering, and booming. And frankly, it's soaring to incredible new heights. Our economy is the envy of the world, perhaps the greatest economy we've had in the history of our country. The only thing these corrupt politicians will understand is an earthquake at the ballot box. That's what they will understand, and they're going to see it. We did it once, and now we will do it again. And this time we're going to finish the job.
So there you go. President Trump kicking off his reelection campaign for 2020. The one thing, and you and I talked about all the different analysis from the mainstream media, and we're like, man, they just don't get it. what came out of it was the excitement of his base that still continues to be there. And look, I don't think anything's changed really from 2016 until now. I mean, some of the criticism is, well, he's bringing up the same issues, because the same issues are a concern to the American public, and they know the Democrats are against it. And those are major issues to the American public. And I think that most people that support Trump look at it and say, well, tell me what another choice is.
Well, and for the left who's criticizing, tell me for the media that's criticizing, tell me what the left is bringing up new. Climate change
and racism. And race. Reparations.
Right. Free stuff. What's new over there? And look at the difference. What are the core issues that are within the role of the federal government? Well, the president's on them. Border security and getting out of the way of the economy. Again, we go back to tariffs, but at some point, we know that there has been a change of heart or something's going on. Otherwise, the steel and aluminum tariffs would never end.
Would still be on,
yep.
Right.
So the fact of the matter is, these are core issues, and they haven't been resolved, but border security is paramount.
Well, actually, when you think about it, and we read the story yesterday that the Democrat leadership now is saying, you know, the American public, because everybody, you know, they talked about Trump's, you know, internal polling from March.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats are doing their own internal polling. What do you think Ocasio-Cortez is out there? She sees the internal polling. She knows the internal polling shows that people don't think the Democrats stand for anything.
Right.
And now she's advocating impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also but she also believes that the issues that she believes matters to the American people, her socialist agenda, her socialist slash Marxist agenda, that is getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
And the leadership, that article came out yesterday, the leadership says if we go down the impeachment road, already the people of the United States don't believe they don't even know what we stand for.
Right.
And we said, well, look, during the Obama administration, it was climate change and race for 8 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it now? Look, we're not, you can't sit there and say you guys are putting words into people's mouths, because we're not. Joe Biden said the number one thing he would do if he got into the White House, his number one concern immediately would be to pass the Equality Act that would legalize any man saying that they are a woman when they choose to be a woman.
Right.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is delusional?
Yeah. Right.
Think about that's Joe Biden said that.
Yes.
So you've got the transgender movement. You've got the emphasis and the concern and the urgency for Democrats to ensure that men get to play women's sports and can declare their womanhood.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be a great speech.
Mm.
I want to make sure that every man in America can claim their womanhood.
Yeah. Okay.
So you've got that, you've got the climate change, you've got reparations, and you got free stuff. Americans are going, huh?
The new women's rights movement. If you're a new woman.
Yeah, the new woman. Exactly.
Then, but this is where we are. And it is a massive disconnect from the American people. I think the American people categorize it pretty much as this. The average person. Mm-hmm. I really don't care what other people do and if they want to live their life that way. But when the government starts changing definitions and the rules that have been a part of our society forever, that are based in reason and logic, that's when it changes. Because you start changing the definition of words, and the left is very good at this. Then you go back. I go back to the CDC thing. Remember, under the Obama administration, they were changing terminology in the CDC. Well, sorry, but a female-to-male transgender cannot get prostate cancer. And a male-to-female transgender does not have ovaries. It's important in the medical community that the terminology be very clear.
And that was, wow, I remember we had that long discussion on that one, because that's when you start getting into the complete and total bizarro world. One of the things you're going to see today is the media is going to criticize the president. They already have. We already read some of the articles out there, the takeaways that they got from it, that he's still talking about the Mueller report. Well, yeah, because that's really, really important. What came out of, we thought it was important what came out of the Mueller report. Now no longer is it important, it seems, to Democrats out there. You're seeing a lot of panic. You're seeing, well, he's talking about the dark times and now how, you know, they're going to go after and find out the initiation, you know, of the entire whole Russian collusion thing. And he's moving back instead of moving forwards. And he's still talking about illegal immigration. Yeah, because he's still talking about the things that you don't wish to debate in public.
Right.
You don't wish to have a debate on it. So you're scared of it. So what do? You marginalize it. And that's what you saw. That's what you're going to see a lot from what the president is talking about. So, but here we go. I mean, we're off and running. It's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. As we stated earlier, you know, the president stating that it is the, you know, possibly the greatest economy in American history. It is not. Okay, clear. It is not. It was at 2.9% last year, which is, you know, great growth rate when you look at the 8 years of Obama, mm-hmm. which was roughly 2.1, 2.2%, but it was 1 year of 2.9. Remember, the president, when he campaigned, he said it, not my words, 4, 5, 6% growth. We talk about, you know, the 2.9% growth last year as good. I mean, we were happy that it got to 3% because sure. we believe a president can win with 3% growth. Mm-hmm. But the claim, and we brought up, for example, in 1984 it was, where we had 7.2% growth, mm-hmm. which is huge growth, by the way, with a Fed rate of 11.23%.
Right.
Right now, as of last month, the beginning of the month, it was 2.39%. Mm. So, you know, we have quite a ways to go before we, you know, match that economy during the Reagan administration. Now, if they get everything done with China and they get the free trade deals done, then, yeah, let's go. I don't know. I've said this earlier. I don't know if you allow the potential of the United States to be unleashed and mm-hmm. with the natural gas and oil production that we have, if yep. you allow, you know, if mining rebounds, I don't know what the potential of the United States is. That's why when the president said 4, 5, 6% in his campaign, we didn't laugh because we said we don't know.
I think too that should be the rallying cry. At the rally last night, it should have been that. That's how you end that. Don't say possibly the greatest economy ever. What you say is, We are doing great right now, but I believe we have not reached our potential
yes.
yet. And in the next 4 years, in my second term, we will reach that potential. I will work every day to get us to a point where we are reaching that potential.
Well, we've gone through the economic indicators over the last week
mm-hmm.
that don't look good.
Right.
You know, and those are the numbers that comes, you know, from industry and transportation and shipping,
mm-hmm.
It's not good. We're not the only ones stating this. This is part of the negotiation now that will be going on with the Chinese president in the sense of urgency. It's mm-hmm. why I believe right. the president quickly backed away from illegal immigration must stop or tariffs on all products.
Mm.
It was eventually watered down, and it was it was at Friday, a week ago Friday, where the president said, okay, we're dropping the threat of tariffs. And it happened to come out as that economic news, some really bad economic numbers came out
mm-hmm.
For that month. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're going to stop it. So there is a recognition that there may be problems in the economy from the White House.
Right.
The fact that the president is doing everything he can for the Fed to lower their rate when it's 2.39% right now is as the beginning of the month. Whereas in 84, when we had 7.2% growth for that year, it was 11%. It shows you the concern of the White House that we need to do possibly everything to somehow, you know, take the bad benefits out of the tariffs
mm-hmm.
and do something else that we possibly can do with the Fed. So there is concern. The problem is, when you're saying it's the best economy, or probably or maybe the best economy of all time,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty high bar that you're setting.
Sure.
And if the economy doesn't deliver over the next year, that will hurt you in your reelection.
Well, and government action is about the movement of money. It's not about the expansion of wealth. So any, like you talk about stimulus, or if the Fed lowers the rates, great, then the private sector follows with borrowing. The private sector has to be confident in the future in order to borrow,
You're saying that the GDP is based on the movement of money and not the production of growth.
Well, what I'm saying is that a couple of things here that the president has done mm-hmm. and talked about, I don't think we're going to get to infrastructure because I don't think the Democrats are going to do
no,
it.
I don't think
it will get through the Senate. But that would be one move to temper what's going on with
right,
the tariffs.
Right.
Trying to temper the hit on the farmers with the handouts. That doesn't work because, again, that's not the expansion of wealth. And yes, I mean, you know, if you're padding the GDP with other things, other government spending, you're not seeing that real expansion of wealth. You have to look at the fundamentals inside that those GDP numbers and look at see what is really going on. If you're not seeing that expansion, it'll be known. You can't hide that forever. You can't cover that up with government spending forever. Obama tried that a lot. It didn't work.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What part of the USMCA, the US-Mexico-Canada trade deal now awaiting congressional approval, seems to concern lawmakers the most? Well, at a Senate Finance Committee hearing this week, the main issue mentioned there...
Enforcement.
Real enforcement.
Enforcement.
Meaningful enforcement.
Stronger enforcement.
Enforcement.
Enforcement. That seems to be the major issue for lawmakers. U.S. Chief Negotiator Ambassador Robert Lighthizer told the panel that not only are there dispute settlement mechanisms in the agreement...
But also what we did in this agreement, which I think is far more helpful, is we made the obligations very, very specific. The more general the obligations are, the harder they are really to enforce. So we were far more specific than a lot of these agreements in the past so that we can precisely say whether or not someone is following it.
Lighthizer also said he's willing to work with lawmakers to further ramp up some of the enforcement and dispute settlement provisions in the deal. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. In other news, nearly three out of every four Democrats believe that a Medicare for All program includes an option for people to keep their private insurance if they like it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Nearly three out of four, that's almost half.
So when it comes to Medicare for All,
they don't know.
Democrats don't know what Medicare for All actually is.
Yay, let's get it. Do you know what it is? No, but it sounds good because it says for all. Mm-hmm. You know we can't do Medicare for some. No, that's okay. Yay, Bernie will get it done because he'll do it differently. Yay.
The majority of Democrats, 73%, believe that Medicare for All allows people to have private health insurance also.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
According to Navigator research poll released on Monday,
right.
Republicans are less confused on the issue, 55% believing that Medicare for All system requires each person to drop their private insurance and switch to the government-run program.
Mm-hmm.
The confusion may explain the discrepancy in Medicare for All polling. When you don't include what Medicare for All actually is, 51% like it. When you include what Medicare for All actually is, 53% oppose it. Americans also tend to oppose a single-payer system if told it will lead to higher taxes and longer wait times.
We want it so... We want someone else to pay for it, but nothing else to change.
Right. And the best way to get there is more government involvement.
Well, Bernie
said, government monopoly of the insurance system is the way to solve these problems.
Bernie said they would be very happy to pay them. I guess Bernie was wrong.
And the best thing is, first response we got was, well... when we said Democrats are ignorant, first response that we got on the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Massachusetts single-payer health system works. Massachusetts doesn't have a single-payer health care system.
No.
They have a private, they have a government-subsidized private health care system, which is not a single-payer system. Thanks for making our point.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks for the help on that. Gets back to the qualification of the respondents to any given pollster. Pollsters.
You said it a long time ago. I thought you were the first one that said it.
Yeah.
We need to, before we poll people, we have to know if they actually know what the poll question is about, whether they can define the terms of the poll question.
Yeah. We'll start with basic stuff like three branches of the government. Who's the current vice president? First and last name. Things like that. Here's your forecast.
Temperatures for this time of year, right at about the mark that you'd expect. The high 100 plus readings in the desert southwest and southern California extend over to western and southern Texas. up into the 90s for the deep south today. A good swath of the nation from the central part of the country all the way through the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast will be in the mid to upper 80s. For the Pacific Northwest, we're still in the 70s today, and in some higher elevations of the Rockies, 60s for daytime highs. Rain chances today, not very prevalent in the west. Look for showers east of the Mississippi to extend from Missouri into most of western Illinois today. And then around the Gulf states, we'll see a good chance of showers. Mainly cloudy, though, for the south and midwest throughout the New England states, so pop-up showers are not out of the question. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Pockets of Civilization. You can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, we didn't get a chance to play this this week, and I want to play it. You ready?
Okay.
Ocasio-Cortez.
All right.
On what's going on at the U.S. border.
All right.
Are you sure you're ready for this?
I don't know if I'm ready for it.
Okay, here we go.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border. No. And that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps. And if that doesn't bother you, we can have, okay, whatever. I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not, that never again means something. And that.
There you go.
Yeah, okay.
She tried to back off the statement saying that no concentration camps is simply a term for facilities holding masses of people without trial. I compliment National Review, among other publications, that came out and said, obviously, she made it clear what she meant when she used the phrase never again.
Right.
Using the term concentration camp directly relates to the Nazis. She claimed it didn't, but then she got caught because she used the term never again. And never again refers to what? Nazi concentration camps.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. The United States is not rounding up human beings and transporting them to these camps to remain there permanently. But what they are doing is we are temporarily holding illegal immigrants who come here voluntarily.
Yeah. It's to listen to that again is again a reminder of the ignorance that goes on the left, and social media is going to check it, but her constituents may not. This is a lawmaker. She's not the only one who practices ignorance on Capitol Hill. But wow.
Well,
she does it really well.
Well, even her defense was wrong. Even if that's what she meant, her defense is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, because she used the word, the term concentration camps and never again, she can't get away with it.
Right.
But even if that's what she truly meant, that her defense was concentration camps is simply a term for facilities holding masses of people without trial, that's untrue.
Yes.
There is due process. In fact, those people that are being held there are being held there. Why?
Because it's part of the process.
It's part of the due process. Otherwise, they wouldn't. The only reason they're being held and not sent back is why? Due process.
And the time that you can hold them is limited.
The time you can hold them is limited, and they're being held there as part of a process that is part of a due process. Even if you're not an American citizen, there is due process in the law when you claim to, want asylum. There is a due process system that is run. But it just shows you the ridiculous. Think about this. Number one, I still have to say, she explains things like an elementary school student.
Yes.
She doesn't seem to have any type of understanding of words. Even her explanation when she makes a mistake is completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And think about this. This is the woman. This is the person that Democrats running for president, they covet this person's endorsement more than anybody else in the United States.
Yeah.
This is where the Democrat Party is today.
Who else in the party right now is the prize when it comes to endorsements?
No one.
It's not the ex-president. Wow. It's not Obama.
That's not Obama, no.
Ask Beto. I don't need him in Texas running against Ted Cruz. No. I don't want. No. Never mind. No. Tell him to doing what he's doing.
It'll be interesting when he eventually drops out and he starts. Anybody want my endorsement?
Yeah.
O'Rourke?
Anyone?
Nah.
Well, I mean, but that's where we are today. That's where the left is. And it was Obama that said it, the circular firing squad. But we said it first. And it's more than a circular firing squad. That politically may be what's going on with that group of 21. But no, it's more than that with the party itself, with the individuals on the left. They are their own hero. They don't need you. I'm not convinced she wants to endorse anyone. I am convinced now, though, she will get prime time speaking engagement at the DNC next summer.
I don't know why I keep thinking it will be Elizabeth Warren.
That if she does endorse someone?
Yes, she can't.
If she does.
She cannot endorse a white male.
Yeah, I don't think so. And she knows Bernie will go, okay.
Right.
Nobody cares about your endorsement.
But a Native American woman, yes.
Yes. Yes, a woman of color, of course, yes. So, yeah. And it can't be Kamala Harris because she worked in the justice system. And so that she can't do. Is that why Kamala Harris isn't catching on? Why she's not on the rise?
We asked that question.
I mean, I can't think of anything else. I mean, the energy isn't there. It's not the same as some of the other energy on the left, although collectively, there's not a lot of energy. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of the town hall things going on cable news. But that's not energy. That's forced. That's contrived. So you see it a lot in social media because social media is an echo chamber. So, but that's not energy.
Two things she's been criticized for by the far left. Number one, she comes from law enforcement.
Yes, right.
Which is demonized to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we've talked about is her husband's skin color.
Right.
Which, by the way, is when we looked, there were the articles written on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which brings up the question on the far left, is she black enough?
Right. Is Mayor Pete gay enough?
Mayor Pete
These are the questions they're asking.
Yeah, we're not asking these. They're the questions that have been asked on the left.
Right.
And in major publications.
Listen, you. Everybody knows I believe this. We're doomed. But
okay, I was waiting for the butt. Is it going to be a butt to this? I didn't know. I didn't know how to respond.
If the Democrats win next year,
yeah.
It's over. And I mean, I'm getting on one of Richard Branson's little spacecrafts. I'm gone. I'm out of here because you guys are really doomed. My doomed clock is going to move up.
If they get elected, you know, I'm going to take a train out of this country and over to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because planes won't be flying.
Right.
So I'm going to take a train to Hawaii.
I feel like Linda Hamilton in T2. You know I believe it. Oh, you know I believe it. It's going to happen. But if a Democrat wins, if they have victory next year on November 3rd.
Oh, very quickly.
All,
we do.
All is off. All is lost.
Could you imagine if Trump said, because we never addressed this either, you saw Biden's comment that, you know, that we need a physical revolution. Imagine if Trump had said
physical,
that.
Physical revolution. What does that even mean?
Because he was responding to Sanders talking about in his book that we need a political revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And Biden topped that by saying we need a physical resolution. You know, in order to get the Senate to agree, you need a physical resolution. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, a physical revolution.
Mm-hmm.
What that means, a violent... I mean, the term physical revolution, political revolution means you do it through the political...
See, I thought he was talking about the Equality Act.
but physical...
That would be evolution.
It might be.
I don't know.
But and again, he was rambling, so who knows what he meant. But when you use that term, physical revolution...
Mm-hmm.
That means violent revolution. That's what the term means.
Right.
And it just flows right. Imagine if Trump had said that.
Right. He's promoting violence. That's what it would be. Physical revolution. Come on. We've had one. You know, 240 years ago, you know, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we did that? These guys wearing red came in. Stop America from being great. The hats they were wearing.
Yes, exactly. We don't want, we never wanted an America to be great.
That's
ever.
Right. Yes. No America, no greatness. I think that's what the caps said. Ball caps. They were wearing ball caps. I'm pretty sure.
Make England
red ball
great.
Caps.
Make England great again.
Make England great again. You guys get back over here. The British are coming. I know.
Give me greatness or give me death.
That's right. Give me health care or give me death.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my, how times have changed. It's just crazy. Yeah, we all need lanterns. I'm going to buy a lantern. If a liberal wins November 3rd, you know what? I'm going to buy a lantern before then. Because we may be doomed before November 3rd. The polls show Biden can win 93-7. That would be great the weekend before, and Trump wins by a landslide. It is all bets are really off because there are so many things right now on both sides. Really, with the president, it is about the economy. That's really it.
Mm-hmm.
With the left, all bets are off because who knows where they're going to go, what they're going to promote, what the agenda is going to be. They were booing God a few years ago. Forget it. I mean, abortion's going to still be big.
Yes.
That's going to be part of the platform next summer at the convention. You know, the Equality Act and everything else. How does that resonate in living rooms across America? Tell me how it does that. On the other side, it's, hey, we'd like to build a wall and have a better economy. We'd like to secure our border and have a better economy. That's how you get a crowd like you had last night in Orlando.
Right. As we said from day one, the agenda, what he wants is a conclusion, is what the majority of Americans want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rhetoric to get there seems to upset a lot of people.
Right.
It doesn't upset us because I don't care about the words in politics.
Mm-hmm.
If you study history, you know they've been vicious back and forth. And as we said earlier, you know, the media, you know, but he's attacking the media. He's attacking the media. No, he's attacking activists.
Right.
Jim Acosta made it clear, even in his book, that, you know, well, sorry, the old rules are thrown out. We're not journalists anymore. We're activists. Well, then fine. Then you're open to any political rhetoric that exists out there.
Yes.
Including CNN sucks that you heard last night.
Yep.
Because you're not journalists. You're activists. And you admit it.
And at least we can say thank you for admitting.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Shell recently launched Shell Rotella T615W40 full synthetic. Megan Pino is Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager and tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
We are excited to launch this new full synthetic Shell Rotella T615W40. This is the first time we have a full synthetic in 15W40 viscosity range. We know that truckers love 15W40. That is the primary viscosity grade used in the U.S. and Canada and really in many parts of the world as well. So our customers can enjoy some of the benefits of cold temperature properties, low temperature and high temperature, allowing for the oil to flow faster into the engine and protect it better. Having a full synthetic also allows for extended drain opportunities for those that are trying to push the limits a little bit. But we always recommend following their manufacturer recommendations and doing oil analysis to ensure that they are changing when appropriate.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. So it'll be interesting to see where the China talks go next week.
Yeah, and if we get any kind of heads up, any kind of indication as to where they are, if we're close to a deal before G20.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.